Hey, good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thanks for swinging on by. Hope you're going to stick around for a while. Well, tomorrow's a big day, right? You all set? What was this this bit about the openly gay bishop, Episcopal Bishop Gene Robinson? The backstory here is Bishop Robinson was invited to today's inauguration concert to give another in a seemingly endless parade of prayers and cries for understanding to the cloud being, and that's where we live, so. HBO covered this, I believe, live. And at the concert, during Reverend or Bishop Gene Robinson's invocation, HBO not only blacked that part of it out, but they also, that was today, they also didn't introduce the Washington, D.C. Gay Men's Chorus when they performed. Nor did they identify them on screen. You know, they did not font them, which means to identify that little block of type underneath someone who's talking or singing on stage, to identify to the viewer who it is. From one of the websites, one of the bloggers, this: after days of controversy and outrage from the religious right, openly gay Episcopal Bishop Gene Robinson opened Barack Obama's inauguration concert on the National Mall today with a request that the nation pray for, quote, understanding that our president is a human being, not a messiah, end quote. But only the people at the concert heard that, because HBO blanked that part out. Who engineered this blackout of Robinson? Now, according to the blogger, the 7 p.m. rebroadcast, these are all Eastern times, of the show was identical. No Gene Robinson. And after that, when I guess Barack Obama spoke, he did not mention gay folk in his in listing the various groups who supported him. All right, the moratorium's still on, but not for a whole lot longer, right? What is up with that? HBO, that's the network that had no problem on The Sopranos showing one of the family members who turned out to be gay. Of course, he got just a brutal death. Remember that? 6 Feet Under, the whole show was created by Alan Ball, who was openly gay. I guess as long as you make money on it, and an openly gay character on 6 Feet Under, one of the brothers who owned the mortuary, but let an Episcopal bishop, not somebody that was some clown that runs a storefront church, the Church of God and Jesus Incorporated. No. This is an Episcopal bishop. One of the people, Eugene Robinson, if not the person, who has caused the schism in the Episcopal Church to the extent that the church has been riven right down the middle now over, oh my God, I can't even believe that. But HBO decided, so you got to wonder, if HBO has no problem showing characters on their profitable series who happen to be gay, or originators of profitable series who happen to be gay, what prompted them to blank out the speech of an openly gay Episcopal bishop? What caused them to not identify nor credit the D.C. Gay Men's Chorus when they perform? Did that come from HBO, or did it come from the Obama transition team? That's A and B and C, does it matter? Well, we're finally going to bid farewell to these thugs this week. This crew of thugs, the Bush crime family. And on this Friday coming, I think Kathy tells me we're going to have a final tribute to Raisin Brain. Now, since we don't work in the medium of television, it's not going to be all that visually entertaining, but I'm not sure what she's going to put together, but hopefully this will be the last time we listen to us. That'll be this Friday. But we're also going to, on the program here, we're going to say a long sweet goodbye to Pickles Bush, whom we will dearly miss. And the way we're going to do that, we're going to play for you some of our favorite moments here on the Molloy program with Pickles over the years. So we're going to start tonight. We invite you to reminisce with us as we revisit 2004. This will be in the next hour, I'm sure. No, what the hell? Might as well do it. You want to do it next hour? Okay. 2004, when Pickles gave her first speech to inner city Ute. You might remember that she was asked to head an initiative for America's troubled Ute shortly after her husband stole the 2004 election. Whatever happened to that, huh? So we're going to play that for you, how Pickles addressed the troubled Ute in America's inner cities, most of whom I would imagine were probably dark-skinned. So when we do that next hour, kick back, fire up a lucky Papa Xanax, and raise a special toast to America's toasted First Lady. Huh? All right. Pickles. You know, it would be irrational to say, and for anyone who works in media, to say that they're going to miss this crew of destroyers. And William Crystal, you know, can go pound sand up his own rectal opening. Yeah, I read his column today in the New York Times. What a moron. What an absolute monster, William Crystal, who should know better, who really should know better. Bush has been the greatest friend to Israel of any American president, nay, the greatest friend to the Jewish people than any American president, he said. I wish I could understand that. I really do. I wish I could understand if Crystal's republicanism is overriding his Jewish faith, which obviously is what's occurring here. Because I think anyone with any sense at all or understanding of what Bush has done would come to the exact opposite conclusion. That through his inattention, his inactivity, his I don't give a goddamn attitude, Bush's attitude, he has been the worst president where it concerns Israel. No effort was made on any level ever during 8 years to do anything to make the Jews of Israel any safer. In fact, every single Bush policy put them more at risk. And not just the Israeli Jews. Jews around the world are more at risk because of George Bush's policies. Is there anyone out there who disagrees with that? Oh, my God. Not only has he put Americans at horrendous risk and this country, you know, this ticking bomb of revenge that Bush has set in motion. Who believes it's just going to fizzle out? Oh, my God. So William Crystal, who spat upon his own religion and tried to praise his own political fervor, wrote today in the Times that Bush has been the greatest friend of Jews of any American president. Astonishing.
you know? It'll take time to restore chaos and order, but we will.
Yeah. I don't mean to get hung up in what is arguably a very minor part of Barack Obama's historic inauguration as president of the United States, but if you are going to have an openly bigoted preacher like Rick Warren on at prime time to the invocation of your inauguration, and you're going to toss a bone to the people who don't like that by having an openly gay bishop from the Episcopal Church to start the festivities the day before the inauguration, then, you know, you should try to get it right. You should try to get it right. HBO is claiming that it was a mistake, according to Lee in Pinckney, Michigan, and they're going to air the entire thing again tomorrow, quote, in full, which I guess will include Reverend Robinson's or Bishop Robinson's opening remarks. Now, I find this whole thing, just sickeningly amusing. I really do, because the mixing of religion and politics to this degree is just absolutely insane. I mean, here we go again, yet, always, right? Yeah, okay. But like I say, as long as this game is going to be played, why not play it nearly as fair as possible? Unless there's some sneakiness afoot here. Well, HBO is blaming the inauguration committee. And the inauguration committee is blaming HBO at rawstory.com. Now, Obama's inaugural committee admits HBO had nothing to do with the broadcast exclusion. According to one blogger, HBO insisted in an email on Sunday night that it was not their decision to omit Robinson's invocation, saying the producer of the concert has said that the presidential inaugural committee made the decision to keep the invocation as part of the pre-show. End quote. Not that I really care in the big picture of religion and politics. Like I say, the whole thing is kind of disgusting. But I think after 8 years of the kind of murderous, warmongering, racist, sexist, homophobic insanity that this filthy Bush administration committed against the American people and the rest of the world, there are so many groups of us, and we subdivide ourselves pretty much, that are looking to see some sort of improvement, some sort of no more of this, that a situation like what happened to Bishop Gene Robinson is one that evokes all of a sudden an awful lot of that pent-up frustration and rage that this filthy Bush administration has given all of us. So, I don't know if the controversy, quote, will continue or not. I'm sure the right wing is just one more thing they just love. But screw them. Your Republicans don't matter anymore. They really don't. And these neoconservatives don't matter anymore. We have to live with their policies. We have to correct the huge amounts of human waste that they have dumped all over America, all over the Constitution, and all over our planet. We are going to have to clean it up. But as far as Republicans or conservatives having any sort of input any longer, I don't think it's going to happen. They're a dead party. They're over. They're finished. How could any Republican or any conservative with a straight face at this point call for a revival of any of the policies over the past 30 years of Republican influence and then Republican leadership that has led us to the situation we're in now. How could any of them talk about supply side economics or trickle down theory or, you know, make sure the wealthy are taken care of and the little guy down in the street will get his crumbs, or let's have a robust, or what was the word, muscular U.S. foreign policy. Let's force democracy into tribal societies that want not a goddamn thing to do with it. I mean, who among these jerks could stand up? Well, probably most of them, they still think they're right, and say this kind of stuff and think that anyone in America would even listen to them. This is the time frame that Limbaugh and Hannity and the rest of these propagandists are going to become irrelevant. Not right away. Not right away, because people are going to understand that they have nothing to offer, the Republicans, Hannity, conservatives, nothing, absolutely nothing. I mean, take a look at the wreckage. Good God. Now, there are a huge number of crazy people in the United States who are not yet aware of how wrecked the Republicans have made their lives. But it's going to come slithering in as they watch their lives dissolve because of what the Republicans have done. So there are bigger issues than whether or not Gene Robinson was blanked out by HBO, but that is an item of interest, wouldn't you think?
Is this like a huge distillery?
He said, in monumental anticipation of getting drunk on his ass. But there's booze in the blender, and soon it will render. I think about all the people who have written me, emailed to me over the past 2 or 3 years, especially about the distinct probability that George W. Bush and Dick Cheney and the rest of these killer bastards would not leave office. That all the signs pointed to a military takeover of the United States, a declaration of a state of emergency. When's the swearing in, Kathy? In the morning? First thing in the morning? 11 o'clock? Something like that? I don't even know. Don't email me. we have until then to see if that's going to happen. Dick Cheney pulled a back muscle. He's going to show up in a wheelchair. I wonder what that's all about. Huh? From Prairie 2, Mike, President-elect Obama traveled from Philadelphia to Washington, D.C. by train on Saturday. It was a reenactment of history. A stark look at the present and a signal of hope for the future. If Obama looked out the train windows, he saw mile after mile of factories destroyed in the war on the middle class, undeniable evidence of what his predecessors have done to us. At whistle stops, the former middle class came out to see him, standing in abandoned railroad yards to hear him. They have pinned their hopes, their dreams, and their very survival on his words. These people are the ones who had to pack up and ship to China, those factories where they had built the American dream for generations. Republicans put an end to manufacturing economy that already existed along that railroad line when Lincoln traveled it in 1861. Obama knows the urgency. He has said that we must act quickly and boldly, or the decline we are experiencing may reach the point where it cannot be stopped. Foreign markets dropped today on news that the bank bailouts are not working. When Obama's people take over the Treasury Department tomorrow, they may be shocked at what they find. Yeah, they may be, huh? I was listening to Overman's program right before we went on the air. and Olbermann's plea to Barack Obama to essentially put George Bush on trial for the crimes that he has admitted to, the torture that he's admitted to. And not that Olbermann said this, but to do less than that, of course, in my opinion, and yours too, I'm sure, to do less than that would be to become a co-conspirator of the destruction of justice and the rule of law in this country. Obama and his people have said over and over and over again that they don't want to get into some deep investigations. And as Olbermann pointed out tonight, you don't have to, fellas. The son of a bitch confessed. He confessed on Fox News about torturing. I mean, it is as clear as a nose in your face. There it is. He is a confessed lawbreaker. And if he walks away after having confessed on television, even on a sewer network like Fox News, and Cheney has made equally guilty confessions, if the Obama administration does nothing, absolutely nothing, that sends a screaming message, doesn't it? I realize there are, you know, a couple million enthused people gathering in Washington, D.C., and another 100 million or 200 million or 250 million across the country who are just charged up to be a part of this moment in our history. And I feel the same. I really, really do. I think it's one of those moments. Usually those moments are when somebody gets assassinated. This is one of those moments when it's about someone assuming a place in American history that has long been denied to people who were otherwise qualified. But because of their race, it was denied. So it is, I don't want to say a watershed moment in American history, but it is clearly, well, let's do this. It's a unique moment in American history. So anyone who is not celebrating and or honoring and or acknowledging this moment is someone who is historically deaf and blind and probably really doesn't care about which direction this country goes, or is one of these Klan types who just as soon say, what the hell's going on? This can't be. So I don't know. I hope that Barack Obama, in the midst of all the celebrations and all the high feeling of accomplishment and for a huge segment of the American population, tomorrow is Emancipation Day. Tomorrow. Not back. Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation really, in fact, didn't mean all that much, because I think the slaves would have eventually gotten their freedom one way or another. The real Emancipation Day for Black America is tomorrow, when Barack Obama becomes the 44th president of the United States. That's clear, isn't it? So, and in a less critical sense or a less pronounced way, it becomes Emancipation Day for white America too. It really does. I don't know if white people have sat back and thought about this at all. But now, you see, for even the racist white people in this country, they now lose one of the bludgeons that they've been carrying around to use on black folk. Oh, you people can't do a damn thing. Oh, you can shine boots and clean up my grandmammy's house, but you can't do anything other than that, can you? Because you're a Negro. You're not white like me. Right? Now that's gone. That's gone, isn't it? Look at all these black folks. And the president of the United States. Lord have mercy, who would have thought? So, for white people, it's an emancipation of sorts. if they want to look at it that way, which I don't know. I don't know how many white people. I don't speak for white people any more than Barack Obama speaks for black people. But it is Emancipation Day for so many. I mean, just listen to people like John Lewis, used to be my congressman and still is a congressman from Atlanta. Listen to comments from people like him. If you have any doubts about tomorrow being the real emancipation of African Americans. And all the kids now, all the black kids who can be told honestly and truthfully by their teachers and their parents and the people who work with them to try to free them from this awful bigotry and hatred in this country, when they are told, well, you know, anybody in the United States can grow up to be president. Oh, I can see the Hillary supporters getting ready to send me your emails. Please don't. I mean, don't. Because anybody can. It just so happened the American people preferred Obama this time instead of Hillary. That's all. I mean, come on. Get over yourself, will you? But I got a couple of really snarky emails today from diehard Hillary Clinton supporters who continue to say that Barack Obama stole the nomination. Yeah, okay, all right. Well, you know, whatever works, whatever floats your boat. Editorials worldwide. Anyway, before I move on to that, I hope that in the midst of all the celebrations and the good feeling that's going to be available, if people want to take advantage of the good feeling, black and white. I wonder if there will be any attention paid to the fact that the former president has admitted to a felony, a crime against humanity, a war crime, that the former president of the United States, for the first time in the history of this nation, has admitted to a war crime. Now, he figures he's just going to, well, I'm going to hang out there and watch, you know, what's his name? Brock. Watch him get sworn in, and then Pickles and me, we're heading for the ranch. You know, take a little break. I don't know. I'm gonna wind up working on some oil company. Yeah, some bitch. That's what he thinks. And as Keith Olbermann pointed out tonight, if Barack Obama does not bring the hammer down on an admitted war criminal, God damn it, there's no other way to look at this. If Barack Obama does not bring the hammer down on this guy, then Barack Obama is saying, well, it's okay. It's okay, my fellow Americans. It's okay, rest of the world, that the former leader of the United States has admitted to being a war criminal, and we are going to do nothing. Are we in that deep financially on a global basis that becomes irrelevant? If we are, then we're in deeper trouble than any of us thought.
Behind the clouds, there's darkness all around me, and I'm just destroying the world I'm living.
I've reminded the Prime Minister, the American people, Mr. Prime Minister, over the past months that it was not always a given that the United States and America would have a close relationship.
What a dumbass. Rich in Minneapolis says, Mike, I do have some concerns as well about Cheney. He says, I know the White House has had the required photo op packing moving events, but is Cheney even packed? I've heard no news reports concerning his leaving town. I've tried to find out if Cheney has indeed made it look as like he is leaving, if he has some last maneuver planned. We all will know his plans tomorrow. I suspect many years from now it will be disclosed that the military quietly made it clear they would not back a White House overthrow of the government. You and whose army may have indeed been said.
Well, you know, he's got to move at night. And, you know, he only needs seven or eight of his minions to crate up the boxes of sacred dirt, so probably won't take that long.
Yeah. Here's a news item from a couple of days ago. Charles MacArthur Emanuel, the son of former Liberian President Charles Taylor, and head of a paramilitary union unit known as the Demon Forces, was sentenced Friday here in the United States to 97 years in prison for torture. Well, there's there you go. 97 years in prison for torture. Of course, he's not our guy, right? Editorials worldwide have been taking their final printed whacks at George W. Bush, accusing him of what many saw as a tarnishing of America's standing in the world and his arrogant and incompetent leadership. Sure, why not? A German newspaper, Süddeutsche Zeitung, under a headline that said, "The Failure," editorialized, quote, "A weak leader. Bush was overwhelmed in the job. He confused stubbornness with principles. America has become intolerant and will take a long time to repair that damage," end quote. And as you can guess, the editorials in newspapers around the world charged this war criminal for his unfinished wars, for plunging the economy into recession, for turning a budget surplus that was handed to him by the Clinton administration into a mountain of debt, for his environmental policies, and for the illegal criminal war crimes activities at Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib, Diego Garcia, Cairo, secret places in Syria where the Canadian man, what was his name, Arar, was that his name, who was tortured after being renditioned, secret torture prisons in Thailand, I believe. We've got them all over the planet. It is very convenient to the Bush crime family. It has been convenient, and to the establishment in this country that will seek to maintain these chambers of horror, this gulag. It's been very convenient to them that media and the American public only focus on Guantanamo, even to the point of continuing to refer to it by the affectionate name that the Navy has always referred to Guantanamo, Gitmo. You put these bastards in there and you'll get Mo if you torture them. Gitmo, get Mo out of these boys! Israel was the most complimentary of his intentions, if not necessarily his achievements. Jerusalem Post wrote during Bush's final visit, quote, "Of all the U.S. presidents over the last 60 years, it's hard to think of a better friend to Israel than George W. Bush," end quote. So what William Crystal wrote in today's New York, was it today? I don't think it was today's New York Times. Sunday? I don't know. It doesn't matter. But what William Crystal said was, obviously, he just plagiarized what was in the Jerusalem Post. I can't imagine anyone in positions of authority in the Israeli government, with the exception, of course, of the obvious war criminals. They've got theirs, we've got ours, the Likudniks, thinking that George W. Bush has done anything positive for the state of Israel, anything at all. Columnist for the Jerusalem Post, Carolyn Glick, wrote last year, Bush, quote, recognizes Israel and U.S. share the same enemies, and they seek to destroy us because we represent the same thing, freedom. Why is it assumed that we share the same enemies as Israel? Do we share the same enemies as Cuba or Poland or, I don't know, Tibet? Why is it that it's assumed that we share the same enemies as Israel? Bush doesn't. If the enemies that this writer is referring to are Muslims or Arabs, Bush and Cheney and Wolfowitz and the rest of these pigs, they make nice kissy face with Muslims and Arabs, the oil sheikhs and the Abu Dhabi crowd. So what is the editorial writer referring to? Well, what enemies? These are the people who have always bailed Bush out whenever he got his ass deep in alligators again. So what is Carolyn Glick at the Jerusalem Post referring to? The same enemies. Huh? Isn't it weird? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. This is the Malloy program on the Nova M Radio Network. It's about 7 minutes past the hour. I want to go a little bit more with this, how the editorials worldwide are pretty much putting it out there, what Bush has meant to the rest of the world. The Toronto Star in Canada said, quote, goodbye to the worst president ever. Bush was an unmitigated disaster, failing on the big issues from the invasion of Iraq to global warming, Hurricane Katrina, and the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression, end quote. That's the Toronto Star. Sunday Times in London said Bush leaves the country and an economy in tatters. Britain's Daily Mail pointed out the fact that he entered office with a budget surplus of $128 billion, but exits with a $500 billion deficit. The Daily Mail said, quote, he leaves the world facing its biggest crisis since the Depression, the Middle East in flames, and U.S. standing at an all-time low. The Daily Mail went on to say, how will history judge George W.? Have we, perhaps, to quote his own mangled malapropisms, quote, underestimated him? Oh, God. The Scottish Daily Record observed, quote, America is now hated in many parts of the world. Bush leaves a legacy of wars and the world economy in meltdown. He has been dismissed as a buffoon and a warmonger, a man who made the world a more dangerous place while sending it to the brink of economic collapse, end quote. The Economist said, quote, he leaves as one of the least popular and most divisive presidents in American history. Bush has presided over the most catastrophic collapse in America's reputation since World War II. The Sydney, Australia Morning Herald complained about Bush's, quote, singular lack of curiosity in international matters. That was in an editorial entitled Farewell to a Flawed and Unpopular Commander-in-Chief. The French Le Monde said it's hard to find a historian who won't say that Bush was the most catastrophic leader the U.S. has ever known. The German newspaper, well, Germany, you know, remember it was ridiculed by Rumsfeld as being part of old Europe. I guess new Europe was, what, Romania and the Czech Republic. And, you know, that was new Europe. Rumsfeld referred to Germany as old Europe. Die Zeit newspaper said Bush brought great misery to the world with his friend or foe mentality. Stern magazine said, quote, Bush led the world's most powerful nation to ruin. He lied to the world, tortured in the name of freedom, and caused lasting damage to America's standing, end quote. the pan-Arab newspaper Al-Hayat said, quote, we cried a lot and the joke was on us, end quote. Austria's Wiener Zeitung wrote that Mahmoud Ahmadinejad of Iran ranked higher in one international poll than even Bush. The newspaper said, quote, the United States was once the symbol of justice in the world, but that has been damaged by Bush. A web of manipulation has cost America $900 billion and the lives of 4,000 soldiers, along with at least 500,000 Iraqis, end quote. And in Poland, the Warsaw Daily Zienik lamented the worst part about Bush's presidency, quote, it was empty rhetoric, end quote. And on and on and on and on. I mean, the consensus is very clear. The majority of opinion on Earth is very clear. It's not just, you know, a bunch of pissy liberals in the United States, as Hannity and Bush, or, well, Bush too, but Hannity and Limbaugh and the rest of these pigs would have their listeners believe. All right, we're going to, I'll tell you what I'd like to do. How long is that, is Pickle's little, you want to do that now? Yeah, all right, at the bottom of the hour, we're going to revisit Laura Pickles Bush, as she addressed a leadership conference of inner-city Ute right after Bush stole his second election. Laura Pickles Bush was going to lead this great big old initiative to help out the colored kids in the inner city assume leadership positions and responsibilities, and her her talk to the leaders of these inner-city organizations, and a few gang leaders were there too, was just an inspiration, I swear to God, to all Ute, black, Latino, white, doesn't make any difference. It was just wonderful to hear Laura Pickles Bush talk to these young people about her initiative, what she was going to do. We'll do that in about 15 minutes. All right, phone calls. What I would like, this is kind of corny, but because we don't do this on this program, but we'd like to get some phone calls where you focus, and I'm serious, you know, if you feel kind of jerky or half drunk or stoned tonight, don't call. I'd like to get some phone calls from people who can really articulate as quickly as possible what your take on Bush's and Bush's. Barack Obama's inauguration tomorrow. In any context, whether it's in the context of the history of this country or how it relates to us as a racially divided country, we have always been racially divided. So is this a healing event or is it just an event? And actually we'll have no, you know, on whatever level you want to address this, what do you anticipate that Obama's going to do? In my opinion, the worst he can do is nothing, where it concerns the criminals that have spent 8 years destroying this country. So if you feel up to it, I'm not sure what we're going to do tomorrow night. Probably most of the day, the entire day, all news in all parts of the world stops tomorrow, according to ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, Fox, and CNN. Everything stops tomorrow. The only event of any consequence will be the transfer of power from the Bush administration to the Obama administration. Nothing else will be happening tomorrow. No wars, no, and yes, we're going to talk about Gaza tonight. No wars, no civil disturbances, no famine, no pestilence, no death, no upheavals anywhere. It all just flatlines tomorrow so that the world can focus on our transition. Isn't that, I mean, the depth of that kind of arrogance is just astonishing, isn't it? But that's us. That's us. So they don't call it U.S. for nothing. All right, so phone calls. The number here is 800-989-1480, if you are so inclined. Let's start with David, who is listening on the Internet and calling from Pittsburgh, PA. David, welcome to the program. We'll get David in a second, I would imagine. David? Are we not ready to take phone calls? Is that it?
Hello.
Hello, David.
Yes. All of a sudden, your volume went down.
Yeah, well, that happens.
All right. I wanted to compliment you. I was told you I couldn't because you don't need that. All right. But what I was going to say, aside from that, aside from many things, was that I remember Lyndon Johnson when he got elected. My daughter was born that day, and I named her Lynn after him.
Mm-hmm.
And partway into his term, I wanted that man to die. Now, be careful. I am a gambler. You never get the whole loaf. And believe me, I feel, I thought our side was at least going to at least deserve a little more, like maybe 70-30 for one time in my life.
Well,
it looks like it's not going to happen. It's going to.
Okay, David. Listen, David. Thank you. I've got to bail. So thanks, David. That's not exactly the kind of call I'm looking for. So let's try to focus on what you expect from the Obama administration. How's that? I can't be any more explicit than that.
The dream in solar energy is to develop technology so that someday your house is like a little generating plant. It's possible to capture the sun, feed it into your house. I think that's a pretty interesting idea.
Oh, my God. Twenty-one past the hour. Let's go back to your phone calls. Janet is calling from Minneapolis, listening on 9:50 a.m. Janet, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mr. Malloy.
Hi.
I'm very pleased to meet you, and kind of like in person, I feel like.
Okay. How are you doing that?
Because I listen to you, I feel like I know you.
Yeah.
For a couple of years now, and I 4 years. I remember you may not remember this, but the night John Kerry lost.
Oh yeah.
I was on my way home. I was crying. I was mad. I was angry. And you came on the radio, and you were somewhat the same way. But what you said changed my life.
Uh oh. What did I say?
You said you felt like giving up. You felt hopeless. Then you went into the bedroom and you saw your baby.
Mm-hmm.
And what's her name?
Molly.
Molly.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, and I looked at my little girl and I decided I'm going to fight. I'm going to fight these people because she deserves better. And I have 10 grandchildren. And you just put so much spirit in me. And I just put my boxing gloves on right at that moment.
Well, great.
And I said, I don't care whoever is the Democrat who's going to come. We are going to take our country back if I have to fight tooth and nail every day by myself.
Well, let's hope with the election of Barack Obama that we can get our country back. I'm all along have had questions, and I'm sure you have had questions too about, you know, form is one thing, but substance is really what matters.
It's another. And you know, and the thing is, we have to be honest. This is the hardest thing that's ever going to happen for us as Americans.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only just Barack Obama; it's all of us together. We have to figure out what we're going to do, because I'm 59 years old, and someone mentioned something to me about when I was going to retire, and I said, "Retire? I can't even die. I have 10 grandchildren." I said, "I cannot leave this earth leaving knowing that they're going to be working job $10-$12 an hour. Where are they going to live? How are they going to buy a house? How are they going to go to college?"
Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, today being Martin Luther King's Day, and volunteering, and that's what we have to do. We have to start, parents have to quit being so selfish in their own right, and they need to start going to them schools and helping and sitting in the classrooms and helping those teachers and going to hospitals and taking care of people and nursing homes and just like they did in the Kennedy era with the youth corps. We have got to realize that America can only be as big and powerful as its people. And we've become sinister, whiny, crybabies, wanting everything for ourselves, got to have a big flat, you know. This is the funniest thing to me. Everybody wants a big, gigantic, you know, flat-screen TV, but yet you'll go out and buy a little telephone and watch a movie that's not even a couple centimeters big. I mean, how do you go from a big TV to a little computer?
Janet, I don't know, but that is a mystery. Listen, thank you. I appreciate you checking in, Janet. I really do. I'm glad you can listen now at a reasonable hour in Minneapolis. And our thanks to 950 AM for taking the program live, especially in Minneapolis, St. Paul. That was a real leap of faith by that the management of that station, because you know how crazy this program is, right? Michael writes in, Kathy and Mike, my kids just put on Dear Mr. President by Pink to remember the horror from the past 8 years, thinking about the only president they've known in their lives. If you haven't already done so tonight, can you play some or all of this song? Thanks for all you do. Mike in Idaho. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to go out playing that. When we return, we invite you to reminisce with us as we revisit 2004 when Pickles gave her first speech to inner city kids. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
we tend to forget. I mean, ours is a society where things are like instant, so therefore history almost is like so far back it doesn't count.
Yeah, you know, like, you know, a history thing, man, you know, so far back. Doesn't count. And there's no such thing as short-term history. So there's no history at all. You know, like, wow, man, I'm totally zen. I live in the perfectly in the moment. Crazy bastard.
25 before the hour. All right. Remember what it was now. Pickles gave her first speech to a convocation of so-called inner-city kids, which is code. This is right after the 2004 election was stolen by her war criminal husband. And if you remember, and I didn't until Kathy reminded me, that Pickles Bush was asked to head an initiative for America's troubled youth. You know, I want to pick up a phone and call her and say, hey, Laura, how's that going, huh? How's America's troubled youth? I mean, now that we've had 4 years of your working with them. Huh? How's it going? So, as Kathy likes to say, fire up a lucky, kick back with a couple of Xanax, and let's go back to 2004 and Laura Pickles Bush.
Fellow inner-city urban Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. Thank you for inviting me to your charming faith-based community center to speak to your at-risk, underprivileged juvenile delinquents this lovely afternoon. Word up. Looking around me today, I am filled with conservative Christian compassion for you pitiful little hooligans. I wish I could reach through this bulletproof plexiglass shield and give the more sanitary-looking among you a special, appropriately distant hug. Clearly, you are victims of your violent and impoverished environment. Life may have handed you lemons, but I'm here to tell you how you can turn them into lemon Kool-Aid. As those of you with televisions and electricity may have heard in my Bushy's fabulous State of the Union address, we want to give young men in cities like Los Angeles, Miami, Detroit, and the ATL better options than apathy, gangs, or jail. Having devoted almost an entire year of my life teaching young white children how to read, I have been specially selected to head this important new inner-city youth outreach affirmative access program to give hope and direction to your lives, or as we like to call it, pimp my military. Faux shizzle, Uncle Sam wants to give you a ticket out of the ghetto and a chance to put your special gifts and talents to legal and productive use defending your homeland. Contrary to what you may have heard from the lying liberal media, we Christian Republicans believe in second chances for almost all criminals, even murderers and substance abusers. Why, just look at our family history and driving records and my Bushy's cabinet department appointments for proof of that. I do understand that you may not trust what I'm saying is true because in past experiences, the white man has been critical or perhaps even punitive of your boisterous behavior and naturally feisty personalities. You may have even been led to believe that your record as a convicted felon or sex offender would prevent you from realizing the honor of serving God, Jesus, and your president in our glorious army. But word is bond, we're different from those other busta crackers. Where less compassionate Caucasians have seen drug dealers, rapists, and cold-blooded killers, we see creative urban entrepreneurs and passionate inner-city warriors. We recognize, appreciate, and want to compensate you for your many valuable skills. Truth be told, your years of experience in the hood are far superior to any basic training we could provide to prepare you to battle those wily devils in the urban jungles of Iraq. Many of you are doubtlessly proficient with various automatic weapons, explosives, switchblades. So as long as you're shooting at pretty much anything that passes by, why not do your patriotic duty and aim for the towel? For those of you amateur chemists who enjoy tinkering around your neighborhood meth lab, there are acres of poppy fields in Afghanistan for you to explore. Or perhaps the more spirited and rambunctious among you might rise to a position of authority at one of our fine military detention centers like Gitmo or Abu Ghraib or some places in Thailand that we can talk about later.
Given his rowdy record in the Texas Air National Guard, you can rest assured there's always a bit of amusing rough and tumble to be had in Bushy's military. Now I gotta hit you with some painful digits. According to Census Bureau data, the sobering fact is that the typical urban gang member dies a violent, tragic, pointless death before their 30th birthday. So ask yourself, what would make your Mama Dukes more proud? If you were shot by some villain while jacking a moldy ride? Or if you came to meet Jesus while fulfilling your Christian duty of exterminating the evil enemies of America? Even mo better, your government is now offering a generous financial gratuity should you make the ultimate heroic sacrifice on foreign soil. Presently, there is rarely monetary compensation when one of your posse is assassinated, but $100,000 would go a long way toward providing, in your absence, heaps of bling-bling for your grieving boo, not to mention many fly rims for your homies to remember you by. All of you have mothers, and some of you have fathers as well, who'll be so proud when you trade in your gang colors for the ragged-out fat threads of a U.S. Army uniform. In closing, I hope you now realize that everyone can benefit and prosper from the war on terror, even you poor little brown people. The U.S. Army is reaching out to you. Hope you holla back. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, God bless America. Peace out.
Oh, my God. Do you remember the... well, guess what? We have an update. Pimp My Military? We have an update for you on that particular initiative from today's New York Times. The headline is, More Americans Joining Military as Jobs Dwindle. How about that? So there's a successful Bush program. Destroy the economy of the United States, and you'll get all the inductees you can... Not inductees anymore, Mike. It's an all-volunteer army, or it's an all-recruited army. But looks like it succeeded. As it says, as the number of jobs across the nation dwindles, how do you like that as an opening phrase? Huh? As the number of jobs across the nation dwindles, Jesus. More Americans are joining the military, lured by a steady paycheck, benefits, and training. That's the lead to Lizette Alvarez's story in an article in today's New York Times. Lured by a steady paycheck, benefits, and training. What about death, dismemberment, tragedy? The article goes on to say, the last fiscal year was a banner one for the military, with all active duty and reserve forces meeting or exceeding their recruitment goals for the first time since 2004, the year that violence in Iraq intensified drastically. Okay, at the risk of some of you right-wing cockroaches sending me an email questioning my patriotism, I just have to ask, is this what we have become? That the United States military has become the employer of last resort. Oh my God, is that where we are? With this influx of warm, muscular male and perhaps a few female bodies, does this mean that we're going to have to find some place to put these soldiers to work? Is this the new Barack Obama army that is going to be sent to Afghanistan the same way Alexander the Great sent his soldiers, and the British Empire sent their soldiers, and the Soviet Empire sent its soldiers, and now the dying, if not already dead, American Empire is going to send its soldiers? Come on, President Obama, you're smarter than that. You really are, aren't you? We have 25,000 U.S. troops there now, I believe. NATO is getting antsy. The NATO nations want to get out of there. And I keep hearing that General Petraeus and President Obama are going to decide to send perhaps another 30 or 40,000 U.S. troops to Afghanistan. Could it be that Laura Pickle Bush's initiative to help the inner city youth pimp the military has, in fact, worked? Destroy the civilian sector with its jobs and provide all this wonderful training, lifestyle, paycheck, and benefits in the military. Voila! What do you have? But doesn't it say an awful lot about a society that has to fall back on the military as the employer of last resort? As the number of jobs across the nation dwindles, more Americans are joining the military.
Wait forever for the young Marine. Now I believe to be here is right. But I have to say that I'm scared tonight. Crouching in this hole, with a mouth full of sand. What comes first, the country or the man?
Your host for a Pence, Friends Future, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Jesse is calling from Brooklyn. Jesse is the editorial writer at TVNewsLies.org. Hey, Jesse.
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right. How you doing?
Getting a little shaky about tomorrow, but I think I'm gonna enjoy the purge if nothing else.
Why are you getting shaky?
Well, you know, to me, you know, a lot of people are on this Obama euphoria, And to me, I interpret it more as a relief. You know, it's like 8 years of constipation. How wonderful it's gonna feel once you.
okay. Right. Well, I get that part.
Yeah, but you know, I look at, you know, again, the Manchurian candidate situation. This created, well-spoken and very presentable guy that is basically, you know, enveloped by the same old establishment figures, albeit they're different than the radical neocons. I just don't see much of a change in direction when it comes to marching towards what seems to be the end of autonomous governments around the world. Really looks to me a little bit like they're going to continue on towards a world government.
It could be worse than that. Right?
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe.
I mean, I don't think, when you said Manchurian Candidate, I remember the movie real well because it scared the hell out of me. And I don't think the goal of the cabal of conspirators in that movie was world government, was it? I think it was just absolute, utter lockdown control of the United States, right?
Yeah, well, but, you know, by Manchurian Candidate, I mean, in the fact that his policies are being shaped by the people around him, And if nothing else, you can look at his, you know, deafening silence on Gaza to see where some of the influence might be coming. You know, he seems like the decent man, and then when you have a major, you know, issue like that, he remains silent. You know, it's to me, it's a red flag.
Let me ask you, because this has been bothering me, too. All these meetings he's been having with what to me are enemies of the United States, enemies of the people, and I don't mean that in a right-wing kind of way. I mean true enemies of the people. All these right-wingers, the pundits, these right-wing preachers who have no problem demonizing and condemning to eternal hell anyone who disagrees with them, whether they're gay, straight, black, white, Jew, Gentile, doesn't make any difference. Could it be, what about the inverse of the Manchurian candidate? Supposing Barack Obama is the most hip player ever to come along, and what he's doing is jujitsuing these fools into believing that he is, he really has their interests at heart, when what he's trying to do is disarm them. The best defense is a good offense. Maybe he's doing that. And then there's a second thing. Supposing Barack Obama, I'm not saying this would work, but supposing his intentions are really bringing an end to this divisiveness in this country. Now, I know the road to hell is paved with exactly that, good intentions. But I'm wondering, the first one there, if Obama is not jujitsuing these fools into their own sewers. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't know. Maybe that's just wishful thinking on my part.
Well, no, I mean, I absolutely see the possibility. To me, it's a definite wait and see. That's why when I on the election night or selection night, I wrote a commentary. My commentary on the newsletter was one word: hope. You know, and it's yeah. a hope. You know, let's see. It's to be determined. But knowing the state of government and the broken state of government, I'm a little concerned of how reality is going to play out.
Yeah, I am too, and I think anyone who's been paying attention for the past two decades, maybe a little bit longer. I mean, we can go back further, a lot further than that, but especially the last two decades, anyone that's been paying attention. It's really kind of nervous time. So I hear you, Jesse. I agree, man.
Can I just make a quick comment? Give
sure,
someone,
absolutely.
I want to give someone props. I've listened to you and I got to tell you, people who read my stuff, you're the only person that I actually recommend wholeheartedly. I think you're, there's a lot of people out there that tell the truth, but I think you're the only one that's combined truth and sanity into one package. But I want to give some props to a celebrity who's having courage to speak out against Gaza. And I haven't seen too many actually speak out.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the radio actually with Roseanne Barr the other day. And Roseanne Barr, who is Jewish, is probably one of the only big names out there mm-hmm. to sit there and openly risk her career and speak the truth about Gaza. And I just wanted to give her props. I know she gets a lot of slack for a lot of things, but,
right.
The few and far between people who are courageous enough to do that, you being one of them, I just thought that, you might like to know that there's somebody else out there with a celebrity name that's willing to speak the truth.
Yeah, interesting. I haven't heard a thing about that. Isn't that funny? But let Joe Biden's wife go on Oprah when was it, yesterday or today? I guess it was today, and say that her husband had the choice of Secretary of State or Vice President. And all of a sudden, you can't get away from hearing reports of that, because obviously it means that the entire incoming Barack Obama administration is in complete disarray, and they lied about Hillary and yada, yada. You see how they spin it. You know what I'm talking about, Jesse. So the fact that nothing about Roseanne Barr's pro-peace statements made mainstream media, it doesn't surprise me. Jesse, thanks, man. I'm honored that you called the program. Take care, okay?
I'm honored that you had me on. Please.
All right, take care.
I'm your biggest admirer. Thanks so much.
All right, Jesse, thanks. Go to TVNewsLies.org anytime. Check out what he and the other people at that website write about. It's one of my primary news sources. Trust me. So check it out, TVNewsLies.org. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour on the Molloy program, and not on the Molloy program. If you're in the Eastern time zone, it's 7 past 11. excuse me. The under the heading of Crime Does Pay, a federal judge yesterday, according to the Washington Post, rejected the claim by a coalition of historians and nonprofit groups that Cheney intended to illegally discard some of his official records. See, this is why his back is thrown out, right? And instead, the federal judge accepted the pledge of a senior White House aide that key Cheney documents and other materials will be transferred as required to the National Archives. Okay. Now, this decision caps a long legal battle over how much discretion Cheney had to decide which documents he should preserve for history. And as the Washington Post adds, on virtually every important legal issue in the case, including whether courts even have jurisdiction to review the matter, the Justice Department, representing Cheney, lost. But the groups that filed this lawsuit, including the American Historical Association, et cetera, were unable to convince the court that Cheney intended to destroy or keep much of his records under what they call a strained interpretation of the governing law. Anyway, to make a long story short, another example of why it pays to pack the courts with people who are sympathetic to American fascism. Because when the time comes, when crunch time comes, i.e. in a case brought against Cheney, because Cheney has made it very clear that the American public can kiss his large ass if he wants to destroy records that are not to be destroyed according to the law, he'll do so. And no court is going to tell him otherwise. It's just astonishing. Just astonishing. All right. I want to get back to your phone calls as promised. So let's just do that. I've got a couple of emails here I want to share with you, but we'll work them in. Let's go to, Lane, who is, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio, in Mesa, Arizona. Lane, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, always a pleasure. Always a pleasure listening to you.
Well, thanks for checking in.
Yeah, you know, I think regarding your subject earlier, Barack Obama, despite, you know, his centrist, obvious centrist attitude, he really represents a small shift to the left. And I'll take that. You know, that's maybe the best we could hope for.
Well, let me ask you very quickly here, and this is not a challenge. I'm really looking for some answers here. What do you see as his small shift to the left? Give me an example, because I'm floundering, man. I don't see any shifts to the left. What do you see?
Okay. Well, let's see. We've got a health care policy that I think he's mentioned we can buy into the same health care that congressmen are getting,
which has not been
available to us in the past.
Now, has he said that that's what he's going to do? And if that's the case, I'm not, God knows, Lane, I'm not trying to be argumentative here, but is that a shift to the left? Those policies are run by, aren't they? It's my understanding aren't they run by corporations? It's no different from anything else. It's just.
No, I believe that's Medicare, Mike.
I don't know.
That is actually run at a profit margin of around 8%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas, and it's, you know, the people that administer it have, you know, the salaries and, you know,
right.
The best of them, 160,000 maybe, you know, not $1.4 billion.
Yeah, I hear
you. Know?
I hear
and,
that.
So, you know, you gotta kind of, to take us from where we are,
mm-hmm.
To where we want to be, you know, if you have socialist views, you know, Dennis Kucinich would have made, you know, a better candidate for the socialist views in this country,
mm-hmm.
but, he never would have got elected, and we, you know, we would have been stuck still at the right wing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if we don't make that tiny shift to the left, no matter how small, there would be no hope. I mean, the gays obviously are getting nothing, which is no big surprise, you know, mm-hmm. given their history. They rarely get anything, but at least now with a shift to the left, they do have hope. So there's, you know, more hope that things will change, to the left, you know, even, you know, just from that small shift to the left.
All right.
You know, yeah. And that gives us all hope, I think, you know, on a positive note. If we'd have stayed on the path that we were on, I mean, it's like a high-speed train headed for a wall.
Yeah.
You know, and so we're not headed for that wall anymore. You know, and that's a relief. I mean, and I think that's why there's 2 million people in the streets tomorrow. You know, and like the guy said about the bowel movement earlier, you know, yeah, there's some relief, you know.
Yeah.
When this man takes office.
Yeah, I hear you. Lane, thank you. I appreciate what you had to say. Thanks a lot, pal. Hope to hear from you again. I hope Lane is right. But my sense at this point in the trajectory of Barack Obama in the presidency, my sense is not so much at all a shift to the left. Although Lane may be right. There may be a minute movement in that direction that is an overwhelming accomplishment. But I get the sense, Lane, that Obama is just moving the country away from criminal activity. And it feels like a shift to the left, when in fact it isn't. It's a shift away from criminal behavior and criminal activity, lies, and everything that the Bush crime family has come to represent. A shift away from that, and I still will use the word shift. You know, I don't know from this Barack Obama administration. There's some people in it who are obviously selected by him. I don't know where they are in the confirmation process, who are obviously good at what they do. There are also some people who, in my opinion, and I certainly don't stand alone on this, are pretty dodgy selections, some of these people. Like, you know, what is Barack Obama trying to do here? I mean, what's the point? I said earlier, I hope he's going to jujitsu some of these people right off the planet, some of these right-wingers. But I don't know. Anyway, I think what we're all sensing is a move away from criminal behavior that has defined the Bush administration, since day one until day tomorrow. It has been nothing but one long 8-year binge of criminality by these sons of bitches, these Bush bastards. So the move, Lane, that you're sensing, maybe, I don't know, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. The move I'm sensing is not necessarily a move to the left, but a move away from criminal behavior and a lack of respect for common decency. Maybe Barack Obama will bring that. If he brings a sense of ethical conduct or morality, I've gotten to the point where any form of government, if it's ethical and moral, damn near would be okay with me at this point, because so many governments, and ours leads the pack around the earth, are corrupt and violent and disgusting and stink. So I don't know. Maybe what we're sensing, Lane, is a move away from criminal activity. You think? You better thank God for that. There's hope. Every time I turn on the TV, there's hope. Somebody's acting crazy. There's hope. You let it, it'll drive you crazy. There's hope. But I'm taking back my power today. There's hope. Gas prices, they just keep on rising. There's hope. The government, they keep on lying. We're surviving, keep living our truth and do the best we can do, cause there's hope. It doesn't cost a thing to smile. You don't.
the hacienda's dark, the town is sleeping. Now the time has come to part, the time for weeping. Vaya con Dios, my darling. Vaya con Dios, my love.
You have to be a certain age to remember that song. Vaya con Dios. Vaya con Satan. Huh? Right, interesting here from Louis, who writes in, Mike, while I agree about your intuitive sentiments about Obama bringing the hammer down on Bush, but because of the way our system is structured, and for probably good reasons, it will never be the case that a new president will prosecute the mistakes, legal or otherwise, illegal or otherwise, of a past president. This is simply because a certain continuity of the office is inherent in the overall process. In other words, there is no way the new president can be invited to the Oval Office by the outgoing president and shake hands and smile for the cameras, never mind the huge task of the transfer of power that takes place at so many levels. This transfer would not take place smoothly if the outgoing president thought for a moment that he was to shake hands with an enemy. Indeed, any justice to be administered to a president is reserved to be initiated by and is looked upon as the sole responsibility of the Congress, not an incoming president. So for this reason, it's wrong for you to impugn any impropriety on the part of an incoming president regarding the activities of the outgoing one. I agree with you in principle, but unfortunately, it is our Congress which is to be blamed entirely for this issue, both for not inciting impeachment when it was so clearly warranted, and for what it may not do in the future regarding Bush. Respectfully, Lewis. Okay, that is a good point. It really is. I understand that there's nothing that Barack Obama can do about prosecution, but Barack Obama could appoint a special prosecutor to investigate the Bush administration. But I get Lewis's point. I mean, how do you argue with that? I don't know if ever a president has ordered an investigation of a preceding administration. Maybe the continuity of or the ignoring of criminal activity is, as Lewis points out, what is to be expected of a system like ours. That no matter how corrupt the preceding administration is, the succeeding administration has to keep its mouth shut and go about the business of damage control and repair rather than enforcing the laws and putting on notice any future administration that there are people who seek these offices who are not corruptible in the sense that they do nothing. I agree with what Lewis is saying, but in my heart of hearts, I see no activity on the part of the Obama administration as being cooperation in the criminal activity of Bush. If that's an offensive statement, I certainly understand because it's a bit offensive to me, too. But how else do you assess this? I mean, what do you do? Bush and Cheney have both publicly admitted to war crimes. So what do you do? Do you hope that the American people understand those confessions for what they are? That we have two thugs who have so totally dishonored the nation and the office of the president and the vice president that any further activity against them would just be redundant? See, I don't agree with that. I mean, if somebody out here who's unemployed goes to a supermarket and steals, $50 worth of groceries, good chance that person's going to jail. I mean, Jesus God, either there is justice or there isn't justice. Now, if we can make a case that the Bush crime family should be left alone in order to ensure the continuity of government that is so necessary to, you know, what we're experimenting with here for the past 20 or 30 years. Okay. Okay. But is there any way that that we can be honest about it? And maybe Lewis was trying to be honest about it. The crimes that are committed, maybe Nixon was right. If the president does it, it's not illegal. Maybe Nixon, for one time in his life, was right. That a president or a vice president can do any damn thing that they want to do without risk of prosecution by the incoming administration, because to prosecute would mean somehow to disrupt the continuity of power, the continuity of whatever the hell form of government we have left. I don't know what it is anymore, do you? So if that is the case, if Lewis is right, and anyone who makes the logical, I'm saying Lewis's argument is logical. If that is correct, then criminal activity on the part of an administration is to be ignored. I have a problem with that.
Country that's safe, in a land that's clean and free, for every color and culture, every person, every belief. Your greed, your fear, and your lies ain't gonna push me around. I'm gonna use the power I have. I'm gonna vote you right out of that house, 'cause I am a patriot.
The United States is looking forward to eating Indian mangoes.
All right, just a quick break at 25 before the hour. The wind chill right now in Atlanta is like 20 degrees. We spent Saturday and Sunday, we took off for a couple of days and went to a friend's house up in the North Carolina mountains. We had the house to ourselves because the friends, Chuck and Ann, who own it, were someplace else. But it's up in the mountains, and we had a snowstorm, what I call a snowstorm. I guess the people that live in the mountains called it a, you know, pretty good snow, a couple inches. But it was windy and cold. On Saturday, Friday night and Saturday, and another couple that we know from Atlanta came up with their four-year-old, so Molly and Lee got to go tobogganing down this big hill. I mention this because, you know, we said Friday we're going to take off, and a couple of people said, hey, sent an email, hey, did you get your winter, your snow? Yeah, so we had our snow. Molly loved it. She got to make a snow angel and slide over and over and over down this big hill on a plastic toboggan with her friend Lee, just screaming and yelling and carrying on. Had a great time. And when you get up in the mountains like that, you know, Chuck and Ann do not have television up there. They just, you know, you can watch videos. So we did. We built a fire and... Kathy made homemade chili, and I mean, this is back in the mountains between Highland, North Carolina, and Franklin, North Carolina. So, beautiful country. Where we stayed is about 4,500 feet up. That's the altitude, about 4,500 feet. So, Saturday night, we made a fire. Had some chili, drank some wine, and watched V for Vendetta again. And realized again how exactly what that movie is calling for. We also watched Good Night and Good Luck, Edward R. Murrow's story. What was the other one? What else did we watch? Should we watch something else?
You, Mike, that would be the Three Stooges.
Three Stooges, that's right. We had a, there was a DVD up there with a couple of Three Stooges movies. Now, you know, Kathy and, excuse me, Sarah don't care too much for that. But Pat and I just sat there and, why are the Three Stooges such a guy thing? You know, I just don't get it.
I don't get it either, but I wish someone would explain it to me because the whole Stooges phenomenon has escaped me thus far in my entire... And most women I know don't get the Stooges. You forgot to mention it was my birthday.
It was Kathy's birthday, so I was getting that part. So Saturday night, we drove into town. It was about a 37-mile round trip to buy a little cake that said happy birthday and some ice cream. And, of course, the kids love that. They had some cake and ice cream. We played Scrabble. And Lee and Molly were in the basement of this mountain house. And some of the kids in the family, in Chuck and Ann's family, are musicians. So set up in the basement, huge drum set, electric guitars, microphones, amplifiers. And so Lee and Molly got down there doing drum solos and singing at the top of their lungs. And it was such a good thing to, you know, to be kind of suspended like that in time. And isn't it amazing? I'm sure everybody has this sense. You get off like that, away from everything. And if you're only there for, you know, 48 hours, it seems like you've been there for a week. That just getting away from all the ugliness for a while. This beautiful country up there, a lot of black bears. Of course, they're all hibernating now, but a lot of bears, a lot of wildlife. Anybody that's familiar with that part of North Carolina will tell you it's just gorgeous, gorgeous country. And the lake on the property was pretty much frozen solid, so Molly got a chance to do the thumper thing. Look, Bambi, the water's stiff! You know, that sort of thing. She really liked it. Had a good time. It's great to watch little kids have fun, you know, tobogganing. And you kind of forget how that will really focus the mind, right? Sliding down a hill when you're 4.5 years old really puts in perspective what's important. But it was the only bummer the whole trip. Chuck is a great reader, so is Ann. Their house is loaded with books, and one of the books that was there was about this damn 2012 thing that we mentioned on this program about 4 years ago. A lot of people who I know who are not tinfoil hat types at all have been very quietly filling themselves in on this astronomical phenomenon that is heading our way. It is a repeat performance that happens about every 36 to 4,500 years. And I have to admit, the scary part of the trip is after everybody was asleep Saturday night in this big old mountain house, where, you know, it started to snow again and the wind picked up a bit. So, you know, you're up there and it's very cozy and comforting on the one hand. On the other hand, you know, you are out in the woods, out in the mountains. I mean, you are a pretty good piece from real civilization and no television. God, no television! But reading this book about 2012... about the events, you know, that are expected. And if you want more, just you'll find it. Just Google 2012 or Google Planet X or what, you know. Maybe you already know about it. The last time I brought this up 4 years ago, you know, I got a bunch of emails. Oh, come on, Malloy, that's Art Bell stuff. Yeah, okay. All right. Mm-hmm, fine. But laying there reading that in this great big old bed, and Kathy and Molly are in bed. All three of us are in bed. Kathy and Molly are just crunched down under the blankets because it was cold up there. All comfy and cozy. I'm laying there reading and thinking, oh, no, really? Really? But that was the only bummer. The rest of it, you know, if you have friends who have a house in the mountains, we damn sure don't have one. But if you have friends who have a house in the mountains, no matter where you live, maybe you have one too. It's great, man. It is really great. The mountain, I love going to the ocean, going to the shore, the beach, whatever y'all call it, in your part of the country. But, there's something about the mountains that is, comforting to a far greater degree to me, especially now. I mean, you know, you're at the beach, you're having a good time, and you know, you're thinking, what if we get a tsunami? But up in the mountains, nothing can hurt you except the bears. The bears could hurt you, I guess. But you're safe. You know, it's so solid, especially the Appalachians. Old, old, old mountains. Okay, that's enough. Back to the horrors. Sharon in Madison, Wisconsin writes, and Mike, I would like to have heard Obama say, those who broke the law during the last 8 years will be prosecuted. But I realize that even if he intends that, he wouldn't say it now. Bush can pardon all involved until tomorrow. I've read that Obama is a poker player. How much do you reveal and when? Obama is smart. He is ethically grounded. He is historically grounded. He knows that this country's philosophical foundations. He knows his country's history. He is compassionate, and he is politically astute. The sociopathic thugs are out, finally. A thinking, empathetic, savvy human being takes the helm. Science returns, consideration of some sort of rational health care returns, job creation returns. I am hopeful. Politics is complicated. I don't know if Obama will do all that the left wants him to do. Probably not. However, I am happy every day that the election was not stolen yet again, and that we are not looking toward a Sarah Palin presidency. I'm no longer afraid that I'll be living in an America that resembles a lunatic Monty Python Twilight Zone episode. I'm watching. I'm hopeful. That's all I can say. So much damage to repair. Sharon in Madison. And Prairie 2 adds a postscript to what he wrote earlier tonight regarding the shift to the left. If Obama does away with the Republicans' rigged voting machines, Republican voter caging projects, and restaffs the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice, the 2010 elections will take care of the shift to the left. Five Republican senators have already announced their retirements. We'll be right back. Daddy's loving arms are gonna gather you in. Ain't no way the boogeyman can get you. You can close your eyes, the world is gonna let you. Your daddy's here, and he never will forget you. I will take you. And before the hour, thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered tonight and answered your calls. Thanks also to our technical advisor, Ben Birch, our military affairs correspondent, Sharon Gordy. Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf are this program's ethical advisors, and God knows we need ethical advisors. Our economic correspondent is Bruce Enberg, and the whole mess is produced by Catherine Bay. Well, tomorrow's the big day. I get this from Mona in Minneapolis, also listening on AM 950, regarding tomorrow. Mona writes, Mike, there's no one that will be taking a closer look at the Obama presidency than the black community. This community of people has always been left out. The closest we ever came to having a black president was Bill Clinton. Believe that. Our voices are rarely heard, and my thoughts about him becoming president are thoughts of joy, fear, anxiety, and worry. I'm afraid that he will become a corporate president. That's my main fear. All in all, though, I'm thrilled, but I just hope he doesn't forget about the black community. That's all too easy to do, even as he looks in the mirror. Mona. Well, the thing that I just wonder how many white people understand that in no matter who it is, black president, white president, doesn't matter. Isn't that weird to make a statement like that? No matter who it is, black president, white president, doesn't matter. Focusing on the, quote, black community, end quote, which means focusing on that part of our country that has had its ass kicked for so long in so many different ways, helps everybody. It really does. Focusing, because the black community, not to deny the humanity of anybody in the black community or in any community, but the black community, quote, quote, can be, if you choose to see it this way, as a metaphor for the community of Americans, regardless of color or gender or economic status, unless you get up there in the stratospheric ultra-rich, screw them. The so-called black community can be a metaphor for people who need, I want to say who need help, but I don't want that misunderstood. We need the kind of help that comes with knowing that we don't have to worry about health care, or that we don't have to worry about whether or not our jobs are going to disappear, or we don't have to worry that our political strength or power is going to be diverted or diluted or taken from us. You know, you give us that kind of security, which is should be expected. I mean, these are not gifts. The certainty of medical help. I mean, my God, we live in 2009. Is that a big deal? The certainty of medical help if we get sick. The certainty of a job for those of us who can and will work. The certainty of some kind of security when we get old. I mean, give us that, and we'll do the rest. I mean, Jesus, we'll do the rest. Just quit screwing over us. That's what the black community, which I'll tell you something, is about 95% of us at this point. Do you understand me? If Bill Clinton was the first black president, then 95% of America right now are black folk. Do you get that? You gotta be a little bit hipper than the average white person to get that, but you might get it. Eh? What do you think? Black folks out there right now are kind of giggling, going, listen to Malloy. About 95% of America right now is the black community. And by focusing on the metaphorical black community, if Barack Obama can do that, as Mona suggests, it's all good. Has a potential of being all good. We'll see. We'll see. We'll see. Apparently, it wasn't just Gene Robinson, the gay Episcopal bishop who was censored by HBO. Liz writes, Mike, I'm so livid about Gene Robinson being censored by HBO and the live streaming coverage of the We Are One concert yesterday. And then I had so loved seeing Pete Seeger, who was so alive, so full of life and inspiration on the stream. And now today, HBO or YouTube or the Inauguration Committee or someone has taken Pete Seeger off the Internet. So much for access, freedom, rights to information, etc. I really would rather that we would finally get the separation of church and state. But if the gross Wick Warren is still on for tomorrow, we should have had access to Robinson yesterday or today. And then for them to censor the music, damn. Liz. I didn't know that about Pete Seeger. I had no idea. David is calling from China, listening on the Internet. David, welcome to the program.
Yeah, Mike, I appreciate this minute to express my feelings about where I think Obama's going to go. I have hope, but going back about 40 years, I used to think, you know, why the hell isn't somebody doing something? You know, the people, the knowing people, the leaders, you know, exposing Reagan and, you know, all this crap that's going on. And I've come to realize somewhat through listening to you that those people are me. So I will be returning to the United States and doing some community organization to make sure that Obama doesn't lose sight of where we want to be.
Yeah, that's a good idea, David. And I think that's what's going to take from all of us. David, I got to leave you there. Thanks. I appreciate you making the call. I'll see you tomorrow night, True Seeker. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.